So last week when we left off, we had gotten Isaac away from the altar of sacrifice. And immediately after that, in chapter 22, starting in verse 20, we have a genealogy that's given, just kind of a little brief, three or four verse genealogy. And you look at that and you think, well, why in the world is that there? And it is there because it's setting you up for something that's going to happen later on when Isaac grows older and the children and his children get older. That kind of sets you up for a lot of characters that are coming in the future. But in chapter, and what we're going to talk today, we start talking about Jacob. We're going to talk briefly about Isaac, and then we'll skip over to Jacob. Jacob is our next major character. Remember we talked about how that Abraham's life was defined by significant people and significant events. Jacob's life is defined by something different. His life is defined by deceit, being deceived, and then finally, surrendering to the will of God. And those are the things that define the life of Jacob. And he was a deceiver. Some you could even say maybe he was an ambitious child even from the womb, because when he was born, he grabbed his brother's heel. I don't know if it was to pull him back so he could go first, but they named him the heel puller or the wrestler, someone who wants to wrestle someone else to the ground. And so he was that way, and then he lived a life of deceit, and then he was deceived. He got a little taste of his own medicine, and it didn't help him at all until he had to face almost imminent death by his brother later on in life, and then all of a sudden he kind of figured, you know, I probably just need to go and surrender to God's will. And so we'll talk about that more. But where we want to start is, we want to start with the death of Sarah. And this is the modern day Muslim, I believe this is a mosque or a tomb where that is buried over the so-called burial spot of all the patriarchs. And we'll come back and talk about this in just a minute. By the way, this isn't the way it looked back then. They didn't have security fences and so forth. This was built later on, for those of you who might be questioning that. Chapter 23 and verse 1. Oh yeah, I want to do a little disclaimer here. Last week, I said that Hagar and Ishmael were banned to the same area of the world that later on where Isaac, where Rebekah would come from, and that was incorrect. Hagar and Ishmael were banished to a land called Paran or Paran, which is in the Sinai Peninsula, and they went to look for Isaac's wife. We'll talk about this in just a minute, in a land called Aden, Param, P-A-R-R-A-M. So I was got confused. I was confused. I still am confused. But anyway, we'll show that in just a second. Starting in verse 1 of chapter 23, Sarah lived to be 120 years old, and you know, they keep bringing up her age, the only woman they keep bringing up over and over. She died at Kirjath Arba, that is Hebron, in the land of Canaan, and Abraham went to mourn for Sarah and to weep over her. And we don't know if that means that, you know, he was somewhere else and then came back to her, that there had been a separation. We just don't know, or he was somewhere else. It may mean that he simply went to her funeral site and mourned over her. We just don't know. But that's that. Then Abraham rose from beside his dead wife and spoke to the Hittites. He said, I'm an alien and a stranger among you. Sell me some property for a burial site so that I can bury my dead. So Abraham was always very wealthy and had all these, you know, sheep and cattle and camels and goats and all this household. He didn't have any land to bury anyone in. And so he goes to the Hittites, and we'll kind of skip over this real fast, and says, I want to bury my wife. I need a plot of land, a grave site to bury her in. And they said, somebody told him, said, well, there's this cave over owned by this guy, and his name is Ephraim, starting over in verse 10. And he has some land there. And maybe you can go over there and buy the grave site from him. And so he hears all this. And he says in verse, and you kind of get an idea of here the way they haggled back then. It says, Ephraim the Hittite was sitting among his people, and he replied to Abraham in the hearing of all the Hittites who had come to the gate of his city, "No, my Lord, listen to me. I give you the field. I give you the cave that is in it. I give it to you in the presence of my people. Bury your dead." And you think, oh, what? How nice is that? And Abraham says, "I can't do that. I have to pay the price." And Ephraim answers him, verse 15. "Listen to me, my Lord. The land is worth 400 shekels of silver. Well, what is that between me and you?" You see what he's doing? He put the price out there for it. And that's just the way that he wasn't going to ever give it to him for free. Does everybody know that? He was just waiting to get to the price part. And then he said, "And here's how much it's going to cost. Well, what is that between us?" And Abraham says, "Well, that's what I will pay." And Abraham buys the field where the cave is located. He just doesn't buy a little corner over here where the cave... He has to buy the whole field because somebody has to pay taxes on that piece of land. And Ephraim's not going to do it just so Abraham can have a nice burial site. He sells him the whole field so that if there are any taxes or so forth that come up, that who has to pay him? Abraham has to pay him. And so that becomes their family burial plot. Those of us who are from Georgia or Tennessee or North Alabama, we understand what that means. Those of us who don't live those places, we probably don't understand as well. In the South, you usually have a family burial plot where people have been buried for generations. You know, Christie's family's been buried, a lot of them buried in the same spot in North Alabama for generations. That's where the Cantrells are buried. Brumleys. The Brumleys are buried there. Yeah, that's right. Get it right here. So that is what this became, the Pharaoh's family burial spot. And Abraham, Sarah was buried here. Then Abraham was buried here. Jacob was buried here. Leah was buried here. Possibly, let me make sure if there's anyone else. Yeah, Isaac was buried here. And we think possibly Rebekah was buried here, but we don't know. But they were all buried in the same spot. And that is this cave that was owned by Ephraim the Hittite. And it says, it's in, back in verse 9, it is a cave of, I believe that's pronounced Machpelah. Or Machpelah, I believe it's Machpelah. So Sarah's buried, okay. And so Abraham now has something he's got to take care of. He has got to get his son Isaac a wife before she died, before he dies. And so starting in chapter 24... it says, "Abraham was now old and well advanced in years, and the Lord had blessed him in every way. He said to the chief servant in his household, the one in charge of all he had, put your hand under my thigh," and we'll stop right here. The chief servant in his household, if he's still the same guy, it's Eliezer of Damascus. Remember him? Yes, if we think it's probably the same guy. We don't think that's probably changed. The first thing that happened 60 years before, so this guy's up over 60 now. He's getting to be an older guy himself, and he sends him out on this task to find Isaac a wife. Okay? And the first thing he says is, put your hand under my thigh. And this is kind of, this is a very devout, a very serious vow. When someone would put their hand under the thigh of a patriarch. In fact, it's only mentioned two times in the Bible. The other one is found, if you want to write this down, Genesis 47:29. Genesis 47:29, when Jacob is getting ready to bless Joseph's family, he says, "Put your hand under my thigh and swear by me." And the thought was, without getting too much detail, the fact of someone placing their hand on the genitals of a patriarch meant this was very seriously to be taken. Because you don't let that happen very often. That's just something you don't do. Unless it's very serious. And so that's what he said. He said, "You know, put your hand under my thigh, swear on my place where my children will be procreated from, as it were, that you're going to take care of this for me." It only happened two times in all the Bible. Okay? And so he tells his chief servant, Eliezer, Damascus, he says, "I want you to go back to the land." If you look, he says, put your hand down on my thigh. I want you to swear by the Lord, the God of heaven, the God of earth, that you will not get a wife for my son from the daughters of the Canaanites among whom I am living, but will go back to my country and my own relatives and get a wife for my son Isaac. And this is where he sends him. He sends him up here. Now, Hagar and Ishmael, they went down here. Y'all can see I was a little bit off in my directions. Hagar and Ishmael, they went here. Well, he says, I want you to go up here to the land of, it's called, he says, let's see where he tells him to go to. Hold on, I had it marked. Yeah, if you look in verse 10, it says he set out for Aram Naharaim, to go look for a husband, or a wife rather, for Isaac. Well, there's no place in the ancient world where this is ever mentioned. So we're not real sure where it is. We do know later on that Jacob goes there to find a wife, and it's called the land of Haran Padam. Okay? And so we know later on, okay, that's where he went. And we think that is right here. Here is Haran or Haran, where they came from. And we think they were living down here. And he said, well, you need to go back up here to find me a wife. Find a wife for my son. That's probably more information than you wanted. But I want to let everybody know where he's going. It's always good to know where you're going. Okay? Right? Okay. So Eliezer, he goes out, and he is an amazing man. You know, he's been given this task, and he does something which is one of the great prayers in all of the Bible, starting in verse 12. He goes out, and he gets to the area, and he goes beside a well. He says, then he prayed, O Lord God of my master Abraham, give me success today and show kindness to my master Abraham. See, I am standing beside this spring, and the daughters of the townspeople are coming out to draw water. May it be when I say to a girl, please let down your jar that I may have a drink. And she says, drink, and I'll water your camels too. Let her be the one you have chosen for your servant Isaac. By this I will know that you have shown kindness to my master. Now, we can learn a lot about praying in that little prayer. About being specific, about being bold, about basically telling God, Lord, we're pretty stupid. You're going to have to make it real clear to me what's supposed to go on here. And that is what he did. And we're not going to read it, but he answers that prayer in that specific way. The girl comes. She's going to give, she says, oh, before, you know, I'll give you water. Wait a minute. I want to water your camels too. And the light bulb goes on for him, and he's going, hot dog. You know, that's in the Hebrew, hot dog. You know, it happened just like I said it would, just like I prayed. And you can imagine the type of faith that built in him. Okay? So let's skip on down. And I do want to show you one thing. Yeah, let's start in verse 15. Before he had finished praying, yeah, that's good, Rebecca came out with a jar on her shoulder. She was the daughter of Bethuel, son of Milcah, who was the wife of Abraham's brother Nahor. You go, well, what has that got to do with anything? You mean if you go back to that little genealogy? It's already drawn up that genealogy for you. That's why he put it in there, to let you know something cool is about to happen. So the servant hurried to meet her and said, please give me a little water from my jar. And she said, oh, let me do your camels first, blah, blah, blah. It says then in verse 22, when the camels, I wanted to do this for all the parents before the teen girls getting here. When the camels had finished drinking, the man took out a gold nose ring weighing a beka, and two gold bracelets wearing 10 shekels. Then he asked, whose daughter are you? Please tell me, is there room in your father's house for us to spend the night? Does everybody see what he gave her? He gave her a gold nose ring, parents. So lighten up. Let's tell you, don't make a big deal out of it, okay? If you won't make a big deal out of it, it'll go away a lot faster. This is free information for you. When my son wanted an earring, I went, okay. You wanted a tattoo? I went, okay. You know, and he doesn't wear an earring anymore, and he can't get rid of the tattoo. It looks pretty cool, though, I think. But just don't be too serious about stuff like that. It goes away a lot faster if you kind of take it easy with the whole thing. So that was for free. Yeah. So, well, what happens? Well, he goes and tells them what's happened and so forth. And it says then he tells them the whole story. And let's skip on over to 50 because now her father, is it her father and her aunt or her sister and her brother? Skip in verse 50. Laban is Laban her father? I'm sorry. Laban's her brother, right? Oh, that's right. Yeah, and Bethuel is, I think that's her mom. Is that right? Okay. Laban and Bethuel answered. He saw what happened. He says, "This is from the Lord. We can say nothing to you one way or the other. Here's Rebecca. Take her and go, and let her become the wife of your master's son, as the Lord has directed." We go, well, yeah, that sounds about right, you know. I want you to think about what happened here. Them saying, first of all, this is from the Lord. Unless something happened that we don't know about, these guys were Canaanites. They didn't have a relationship with God that we know about. Maybe they did, but nothing's ever been indicated because they were back. Remember where they were? They were back up here. They didn't go with Abraham down here and get to hear the blessings from God. And so they could have become believers. We don't know. His father, Abraham's father, was not a believer, right? He was pretty much Canaanite. He worshipped the gods of the Amorites beyond the river. So we don't really know about them, about their spirituality. But whatever's going on here, they see this is from God because they use the word Jehovah here. They may use El Elohim. You know, they know a God word to use here. And so for them to say that, first of all, then they say, here she is, take her and go. You know, they just turn her over. You know, and then they later on say, if she wants to, and she says, yeah, I'll go. And so that's what happens. So this is a very faithful act on their part, I think. And it's good for Jacob that this happens, because later on when he comes back here to Laban, he needs somebody who's going to be a God-fearing man to deal with him. Because the way he treats Laban later on. So they take her back, and let's just, because I know all the girls want to read the romantic part. I'm going to read it. 62. Now Isaac had come from Bethlehem, for he was living in the Negev. We all know where that is now, right? Right, good. He went out to the field one evening to meditate, and he looked up, he saw camels approaching. Rebekah also looked and saw him. Uh-oh. Some enchanted evening, right? She got down from her camel and asked the servant, who is that man in the field coming to meet us? He is my master, the servant answered. So she took her veil and covered herself, because that's why he had gone in the first place, to bring her back to her master. Then the servant told Isaac all that he had done. Isaac brought her into the tent of his mother Sarah, and he married Rebekah. So she became his wife, and he loved her, and he was comforted after his mother's death. Now, you got to admit, even guys, right, that's pretty romantic. That's a pretty cool scene. We went to a wedding day before yesterday. We went down to Charleston day before yesterday to a wedding. Some of our best friends from Charlotte, the Charlotte church, their middle daughter got married, and so we went to the wedding. And they were supposed to have it outside under the Cooper River Bridge, this beautiful setting they have for outdoor events now. And an hour before the wedding, this humongous rainstorm came. Thunder, lightning, the whole area is under thunder, lightning watch for hours. And so they have to move everything inside. You know, all these things she had planned, all these things she had dreamed of, you know, now everything's inside with the storm kind of flashing around beside them. It stopped right at the beginning of the wedding. But what was so cool was they did not care, because they were in love and they were about to get married. You know, who cares if you have to take us into the bathroom? You know? Right? Yeah. And that'll be a story they'll tell their children forever. The day the wedding was, we thought it was ruined, but it was one of the happiest days of our lives. And that was what happened with him. That's those same feelings that Isaac and Rebekah felt. That here he'd lost his mother. You know, these things had happened, but now, what a great day. Here's my wife. And she obviously was pretty good looking, too. Yeah, she's always described as Rebekah the Beautiful. So, you know, so he really made out like you're on a bandit. So this is probably a great day. He's probably very happy. Okay. So Isaac gets married to Rebekah. And then we have, and let's stop right here just for a second. Then we have our second funeral. Abraham takes another wife whose name was Keturah. Now, there's a lot of discussion on this. Is this just kind of flipping back into history and saying he took another wife when he was living with Sarah? I can't imagine her letting that happen twice. Most people believe this happened afterwards. And as you can see, he's learned about this whole procreating thing because he has about 100 boys by her, has all these children by her. But notice what it says in verse 5. He left everything he owned to Isaac, but while he was still living, he gave gifts to the sons of his concubines and sent them away from his son Isaac to the land of the east. So he does the same thing with them that they done with Ishmael, is that they send him off because he does not want those children of the handmaidens interfering in any way with the rights of his son, the firstborn. And it's really interesting. I was reading this article the other day that they've discovered this town called, I believe it's called Nuzi, N-U-Z-I. And in that town, it's an archaeological find. They have found all these doctrines, all these documents and stuff that were written on clay and things like that. And a lot of those documents have stuff about how a husband is to deal with his wife when they have no children, and the handmaiden can be given to the husband, and the whole thing. And so this was a very common practice back then that, you know, if you don't have children by your wife, that your wife can give the concubine or the handmaiden to the husband and have children by them. But if she ever does have a child, it was in these same documents, a non-biblical document. If she ever does have a child, then that child has firstborn privileges. So what we read here was very common practice back then. Obviously, we're not going to practice that today. No. But that was very common practice back then. Okay. And so Abraham dies, and we need to move on quickly here. And it says in verse 10, Abraham was buried with his wife Sarah. After Abraham's death, God blessed his son Isaac, who then lived near Bethlehem, Roy. And what happens is Ishmael and Isaac come back and bury Abraham. The two boys come back and bury their father in that same cave, that same burial spot. And so the way the Bible does, the Bible's so interesting that pretty much when it's ready to roll on, when God's ready to roll on to the next character, it basically says he was buried and something else starts happening. And this is what happens now with Isaac. Isaac now takes center stage. And let's talk about him for about 10 minutes, and then we'll talk about Jacob for a few minutes, and we'll be through. Ishmael's sons, once more, God says, I want to bring up this thing about Ishmael's children, because remember, one of the children, and we want to give you his genealogy here, which he does. And then it says, this is the account of Abraham's son Isaac. Abraham became the father of Isaac, and Isaac was 40 years old when he married Rebekah, blah, blah, blah. Isaac prayed to the Lord on behalf of his wife because she was barren. And she was barren for about 20 years. She didn't have any children for about 20 years. And the Lord answered his prayer, and his wife Rebekah became pregnant. The babies jostled each other within her, and she said, why is this happening to me? She's not the first woman to say that, nor the last. She was having children. What were you thinking? Why is this happening to me? Christy Barner said one time she told Glenn, her husband Glenn, don't you ever touch me again after their fifth child. She said, don't even get near me. And that's why she said, why is it happening? She went to inquire of the Lord. And the Lord said to her, two nations are in your womb, and two peoples from within you will be separated. One people will be stronger than the other, and the older will serve the younger. Now, that's a big stinking deal to them, because the younger always served the older. And when the time came for her to give birth, there were twin boys in her womb. And she didn't know that until it happened. The first to come out was red, and his whole body was like a hairy garment. So they named him Esau, or Hairy One, or Hairy. I'm saying. After this, his brother came out with his hand grasping Esau's heel, so he was named Jacob, or heel grabber, or wrestler of the heel. Isaac was 60 years old when Rebekah gave birth to them. Let's talk about Isaac and Rebekah just for a moment. And there are some events here that we want to deal with real quickly. Five things. So they have the boys, and then it skips over to a story about Isaac and Sarah, and Isaac and Rebekah. And in all possibility, this happened before the boys were born. Okay? This happened before the children were born. Sometimes the Bible does that. It'll talk about an event, and then it'll talk about an event that happened before this event, and then it'll skip back to that event again going on. It does that. And it doesn't mean that, you know, God didn't know how to write chronologically or anything. It's God's word. He can write it the way he wants it. Right? You write your book, you can write it the way you want it. Okay? So, first of all, the she is my sister story. They go down, there's a famine in the land, and God says, I don't want you to go down to Egypt like your daddy did. I want you to stay here and I'll basically take care of you. And so he goes and he lives in the area of Abimelech. Now this probably isn't the same Abimelech that Abraham dealt with. This is probably his son. Because remember, Abimelech is a title. It's not a personal name. We all remember that from last week. So he's figuring out how to deal with this, being in this land and thinking she might take her because she is Rebekah the Beautiful, right? So he says, I've got a great idea, honey. My daddy worked this and it's always worked out well for him. Let's tell everybody you're my sister. Okay? And so it worked until something happened. And that happens in verse 8 of chapter 26. When Isaac had been there a long time, now they've been there a long time in the land with this famine, hiding this secret. Abimelech, king of the Philistines, looked down from a window and saw Isaac caressing. Isaac caressing his wife Rebekah. If you're going to caress her, don't do it in public, goof. So Abimelech summoned him and said, she is really your wife. Why did you say she's your sister? Because I thought I might lose my life on account of her. And Abimelech says, what is this you have done to us? One of the men might well have slept with your wife and you would have brought guilt upon all of us. So he hadn't touched her. You know, but he thought somebody else in the castle may have done it. What are you thinking here? And I don't think anybody ever uses this ruse again in Abraham's family. Three times, you know, it doesn't work. That's one story. The second story is his relationship with Abimelech, and we're not going to, that's the end of chapter, all of chapter 26. You can go back and read that. But it's a very interesting story, and there's a special reason it's interesting. Is that Isaac and Abimelech kind of live together. They live in the same area. And Isaac is blessed, and because of that, Abimelech is blessed. But they start having problems with the wells. And so every time Isaac will dig a well, his guys will go out and get mad at him, and they'll fill the well up, and Isaac will have to go do another well. And finally, Isaac complains, and instead of going to battle, they kind of give it all figured out and solved. You can read that story later on. But the really interesting thing about this is not what the Bible says about this well issue in his relationship with Abimelech. What they did was, it says they put rubbish or garbage down the wells when they were trying to stop them up. Okay, what does that mean? Well, when they would go back later on and they'd do these archaeological digs, they would dig in these wells, and we don't know if it's the same wells or not, they'd find all this pottery and stuff in the wells and things they had written on them. And so they dig up out of these wells and all these rubbish, garbage humps, heaps, and they would find all this information about the culture back then. So this sticking rubbish down the wells really is a good thing. Because now we can go back and see the way their culture was back then. So that was kind of an... I don't know if that's why God put it in there or not, but I thought it was just kind of cool. about what we could find out about it. You can map... Oh, yeah, there was one more. You can map where Isaac lived by the altars that he built. He was like his father. He would build altars. Now, he built altars and wells, but he did the same thing. Their lives were intertwined with their children. That's another interesting thing about that. We're going to talk about that real fast. Rebekah and Sarah had similar attributes. That may be why he liked her so much. They were a lot alike. They were both very beautiful. They both had children late in life. And they were both vengeful. Yeah. So, and then Isaac's marriage instructions to Jacob are much like the marriage instructions that his father gave Eliezer. He said, don't marry someone from the Canaanites. I want you to go back to my homeland. Okay, let's go on to the next one. This is just a picture, a modern day picture of Gerar, G-E-R-A-R, where they lived, where Isaac and Rebekah lived. And this, in fact, they think this is maybe the actual physical site where the town was, where they lived. But this is the actual picture of it. Now, you say, well, why in the world do you have that goat up there? What's the reason for that? Let's look in chapter 27. Now, first of all, let's talk about something real fast. I've skipped over this. Back in chapter 25, let's go back there real fast. It says, the boys grew up. And Esau became a skillful hunter, a man of the open country, while Jacob was a quiet man staying among the tents. Isaac, who had a taste for wild game, loved Esau, but Rebekah loved Jacob. They had their favorites. We're going to talk about favorites. Well, let's just talk about that real fast. You know, I think if we have multiple children, we obviously, sometimes we just communicate with some children better than the other. And different parents communicate with different children in different ways. But please, 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 don't play favorites. You play favorites with your children, and it's easy to play favorites, right? It's easy to be around the child who's pleasant, and the child who's difficult, that's a little bit harder, whichever one it is. It's easy to do that. We got to be very careful not to do that, because that will ruin our children. It will ruin our relationship with them. And this right here, when it says that, just that one little sentence, Isaac had a taste for wild game, loved Esau, but Rebekah loved Jacob. That set the course on fire for their lives that basically ruined everything in their family. And so it's very important. And then there's a story. Once when Jacob was cooking some stew, Esau came in from the open country famished. He said to Jacob, quick, let me have some of that red stew. I'm famished. That's why it was also called Edom. Jacob replied, first tell me your birthright. Look, I'm about to die. What good is that birthright to me if I'm dead? But Jacob's swearing to me first. So he swore an oath to him, selling his birthright to Jacob. Then Jacob gave Esau some bread and some lentil stew. He ate and drank and then got up and left. So Esau despised his birthright. And the truth is, that really didn't mean very much, that whole event, until later on. Because if Isaac had blessed Esau first instead of Jacob, all that would have gone away. It's just a conversation between two brothers. But I think part of the reason God puts it in here, I know the reason is, God's wanting us to know this is what can happen. And it led to, it really showed the character of both. It showed that Jacob was this ambitious, deceiving guy who was going to be number one. And Esau was very carnally minded. He didn't value his birthright of... This was pea soup. A lentil was a little pea. It was red pea soup. Ugh. Green pea soup is bad enough, but red pea soup. That's what he sold his birthright for. And so little things can have, and we'll see later on, it has a high impact on them. So just remember that. Okay? Now we'll go to, let's see, we have time. Yeah, let's do this story real fast. We've got time. When Isaac was old, starting chapter 27, verse 1, and his eyes were so weak that he could no longer see, he called for Esau, his older son, and said to him, my son, here am I, he said. I am now an old man and don't know the day of my death. Now then, get your weapons, your quiver and bow, and go out to the open country to hunt some wild game for me. Prepare me the kind of tasty food I like. and bring it back to me, and I may give you my blessing before I die." Now Rebekah was listening as Isaac spoke to his son Esau. And when Esau left for the open country to hunt game and bring it back, Rebekah said to her son Jacob, "Look, I overheard your father say to your brother Esau, 'Bring me some game and prepare some tasty food for me, and I may give you my blessing in the presence of the Lord before I die.' Now, my son, listen carefully and do what I tell you. Go out to the flock, bring me 2 choice young goats, so I can prepare some tasty food for your father, just the way he likes it. Then take it to your father, so that he may give you his blessing before he dies." Now, Jacob knows this is not right. He says to Rebekah, his mother, "But my brother Esau is a hairy man, and I'm a man with smooth skin. What if my father touches me? I would appear to be tricking him and would bring down a curse on myself rather than a blessing." His mother said to him, "My son, let the curse fall on me. Just do what I say. Go out and get them for me." Okay. So he went and got them and brought them to his mother, and she prepared some tasty food. Then Rebekah took the best clothes of Esau, her older son, which she had in the house, and put them on her son Jacob. She also covered his hands and the smooth part of his neck with the goat skins. Then she handed the son to Jacob, the tasty food and the bread she had made, and the whole rest of the story happens. But the reason I got this goat up here, can y'all see the goat? Huh? Kind of, sort of? Okay. Because I always thought when Jacob was wearing, yeah, pull it down a little bit. I always thought when Jacob was wearing that hairy skin, he had that, you know, like the, those fluffy, you know, like those, you know what I'm talking about? I thought, surely Isaac is not that stupid. But this is called a camel goat. And this is what was common back then. And you can see they have long hair, much like you would find on a collie. And that's what he had on his arms. And so it gave the sense of smooth skin, but with hair on it, a lot of hair on it. But it wasn't like those fluffy shepherd's coats that you used to buy back in the 60s. It wasn't that. Okay, it was vest. You know, like Sonny and Cher used to wear? It's not like that. Yeah. It's this. And that's how he was able to pull the ruse, you know, to do that with him. But I do want to talk about one thing, and then we're through, is that verse 13, because we're going to pick up here next week. His mother said to him, "My son, let the curse fall on me. Just do what I say. Go and get them for me." And guess what happens? The curse does fall on her. It falls on her because she loses a lot of things. Everybody does, but she really ends up being the big loser in all this because of all that she loses with her sons, with both her sons. And so we'll stop right there. I appreciate, yeah, we're right on time. This is excellent. Be sure and read next week all of Jacob, all the way up basically to the birth of, really to chapter 37, which is Joseph, because we want to get through with Jacob next week and then start Joseph after that and go for 3 weeks and then we'll be done. So, amen. Go get your children. Thanks for coming. Let's have a great worship service.